The Rebel Capitalist Show, Episode 5. Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is The Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, I would like to welcome someone to the show that I have not only a tremendous amount of respect for on a professional level, but a personal level as well. This person's been a good friend, and I've worked with them since 2012. They've helped me make a lot of money. A lot of you hear me talk about buying rental properties in linear markets, such as Kansas City. So I thought, what better person to bring to the channel than my personal real estate agent in Kansas City, Christina Brown. Christina and Caleb, her son. Guys, welcome to the channel. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi. Thank you, George, so much for having us.
Right off the bat, Christina, why don't you kind of give us the background on just really quick, maybe 30 seconds on how you and I met and how our relationship grew and kind of what I did back in 2012, because that's what I'm really talking to people about nowadays and suggesting that they kind of look in that direction of these starter homes, three bed, two bath, where you can get a good RV ratio, good cash flow in a market that's not wildly overpriced like a San Francisco or Seattle. But if you could give maybe a backstory on what we were doing back in the day, that'd help people a lot, and maybe what you're doing today.
Okay, sure. So, you know, we're online. We've been doing this a while now, and we got a random contact from you, George, asking for help in investing. And we get contacts all the time from people all over the world. So sometimes they turn out, sometimes they don't. I find some agents don't take them all seriously and won't even try, but we're not that way. So I think you actually reached out to my husband, and he's the one that actually started that relationship and got the information of what you were looking for. And to my knowledge, you hadn't really done a lot of investing in real estate prior to that. So
Never.
Yeah. Wow. So yeah. It was really up to us to familiarize you with some things, but you, of course, were super quick study. You're very smart and you did a lot of research. But the Kansas City market is definitely a phenomenal market to invest in. It was then, it still is, and I think it will be for a really long time. So we're in a unique area. We're kind of in this bubble where prices, if you go just a little north, east, south, west, all around where we are, prices are quite a bit higher than where we're at here in Kansas City. So we're in this nice little area that properties are very affordable and appreciation is going strong and the economy is great. And so anyway, we just get a lot of investors from all over the country, yes, but also all over the world. So we definitely suggested the 3-2 is the way to go because that's the ones that will go the fastest, definitely the most profitable. You can keep them full and occupied very easily.
Yeah, those are the three bedroom, two bath starter homes. Generally in that area, they're about 1,000 to 1,200 square feet. Going back to when we first met in 2012, I was definitely a newbie, didn't know the first thing about real estate investing. But you guys had only been in the business for maybe, what, a couple years at that time?
We started and I was in Colorado. We were new to the Kansas City market.
Right.
So I got my license in Kansas City in 2009, and then Steve, my husband, joined me in 2010. So yes, I would say that's fairly early on in our career for sure.
Yeah, but now, I mean, you guys were kind of just getting started and growing your business. But talk to me about where you guys are now. I mean, now you're top of the food chain there. You're the king and queen of Kansas City real estate, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we've done really good. We've been in the top 200 list for I don't know how many months and months that's been, but yeah, we have a really nice business going on. And of course, since then, recently last year, our youngest son joined us. So we're super excited about that. And of course we have plans to continue to grow. And our goal in 2020 is that we do 175 units. So that's
fantastic. Yeah. So my point there is that Christina and Steve, and now Caleb, they're the real deal. I mean, they're the absolute pros. They not only know how the transactional side works with buying and selling real estate, but they know those areas. Like, I mean, to say that they know them like the back of their hand is even an understatement. I mean, they not only know it on a street to street level, but like a house to house level when you're talking about these areas that I always suggest, like Independence, like Blue Springs, like Lee's Summit. So let's dive into that, Christina.
Okay.
Let's kind of, if you guys could give me what your thoughts are on Independence and Blue Springs and Lee's Summit and kind of how those areas differ. You know, are they suburbs of Kansas City? Are they in Missouri? And then maybe some of the pros and cons to each one. And then with especially Independence and Blue Springs, some of the areas that you really want to focus on and other areas that might not be as attractive.
Sure. Well, Kansas City, we get asked this a lot. It's not just in Kansas. It's about 50-50. Half of it's on the Kansas side, half of it's on the Missouri side. So we live on the Missouri side. We're licensed in both states. So we do all around the Kansas City area on both sides of the state line. But this area, as you mentioned specifically, is really close to us. Steve and I grew up in Blue Springs, so we're extremely familiar with that area and the surrounding areas. But something unique that's happened in Independence is they've just started to be a little tougher on investors. And if you own more than three properties, you have to now start paying all these fees and have these inspections done and things that meet their standards and so on and so forth. And so that's probably the downside to Independence. Independence is the lesser, less expensive areas. So I'll let Caleb chime in.
Okay. So she is talking about Independence, like she said, usually for like a three-bedroom, one-bath, three-bedroom, two-bath rentals are usually $900 to $1,100. And then in the better areas, they're more than obviously. But it's a good starter price point because you could find stuff between $50,000 and $80,000, and you might be able to put a little bit of work into it too. So you build that equity where it's worth $120 to $140. You know, better areas worth more. And you always get that consistent cash flow. So Independence, you know, it's a really, it could be a C to B kind of area where you won't really have problem tenants, but then again, you're not gonna have huge appreciation, but they are they cash flow nicely, they turn really easily. And same with Blue Springs and Lee Summit, they're more of like a B to A area where they're really nice. And I mean, you usually have middle to high income families renting out there, so they stay there a long time. And you could find the 1% rule pretty easy in pretty much every city. I mean, some cities like Overland Park on the Kansas side, they're a little bit more expensive.
Right.
And those 1%, as much as 1%, that's more banking on appreciation if that's what you were going for. But on the Missouri side, I mean, pretty much every property you could hit 1% easily. You could just throw anywhere on the map and you could hit it. And most of the time they rent out easy. There's a few spots that you obviously want to stay away from in Kansas City, but overall it's a pretty safe kind of area. Stuff turns pretty easily and it's just a good little pocket in the Midwest. So yeah.
Yeah. It's so correct me if I'm wrong, but the rental laws in Missouri favor the landlord a little bit more than they do on the Kansas side. And that's why back in 2012, I focused the majority of my attention on the Missouri side. But it sounds like Independence is kind of going the way of Kansas. Is that what I'm hearing?
And Raytown is right by Lee's Summit, and also Kansas City, Missouri, they have been introducing tenant bills that I've been watching very closely where they're making it still landlord favored, but they're trying to make it where you can't do as detailed when you screen tenants and all that kind of stuff. And you got to give tenants more heads up when you go and do inspections and all that kind of stuff. So they are looser than Kansas. They have been in these right now they're voting and stuff as far as the city about the new tenant laws that they're thinking about introducing. But overall, I mean, the landlords I've worked with, we haven't really had problems with landlord laws, and that's really not a thing here, you know, like coastal cities where it is more of a problem, and they don't have where you can only raise rent a certain amount per month and all that kind of stuff. So,
rent
yeah.
control, right. Yeah, I still have properties in Independence. I haven't had too many issues there, but hearing that new intel, what I would suggest for people that are just maybe considering Kansas City for the first time is let's just forget about Independence, because independence, you got to know the area. There's some spotty areas. There's some, there might be a little bit more opportunity there for cash flow because you can get cheaper properties, but then you're dealing with a lower tenant that you probably don't want to deal with if you're not from Kansas City and you can't just drive there. So if you want to stay in the, if you want a rental property as a passive investment where you can rely on your property manager, it's, there's just a few places in Independence where I think you could achieve that. And if the laws are getting a little iffy there, why even bother? So then let's move on to Blue Springs and Lee's Summit, where almost you could just throw a dart anywhere in that area and you're gonna find a really great rental property. And it sounds like the laws there are still really landlord friendly. So what areas, let's start with Blue Springs. What I know there's just a couple areas that you might want to avoid by the highway and then kind of that old town, but then the rest of it's just awesome. Is that still the way it is?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
There are some areas, and we would tell a buyer that if there's an investor that wanted to invest in the area, we would obviously educate them on that. But most of the areas, both in Lee's Summit and Blue Springs, are completely great and safe and not a big deal. But
and Caleb, it sounds like even within those areas that are nice or the A neighborhoods where everyone wants to live, maybe around Keystone Park or that, you know, anywhere in Lee's Summit. And also I want to touch base on why people want to live there. It's really all about the schools, isn't it?
Yes. The schools, like looking at the Zillow map thing, which I don't know how accurate they are, but they rate the schools about a 7-8 out of 10 as far as what I saw in Blue Springs. Some of the elementary schools are 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10. And Lee's Summit has just been booming like crazy. And they have three really big high schools. And it's just like one of those areas where a family wants to be.
Yeah.
And you're going to really have low-income people, I mean, because they just can't afford it. Because it's just one of those areas.
Yeah, it's a very desirable area. And I always tell people that when you're looking at a rental property at a micro level, you always want to look at those components that will make the rental property attractive to not only potential renters, but potential buyers, not, you know, in 5 years, 10 years into the future. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you look at Lee's Summit 15 years ago, it was just as desirable as it is today. Isn't that the case?
Absolutely, it is. And I agree with you. We tell people all the time, if they don't even have kids in school, even if they're never going to have kids or their kids are already grown, you still want to look at that because that's going to affect your property values and appreciation and how that whole area is going to hold over time. So absolutely.
Yeah. And Caleb, are you still able to get a 1% RV ratio in Lee's Summit and Blue Springs?
It's tougher. Honestly, it's tougher, but you can. I mean, because the rents in Lee's Summit are more expensive than Blue Springs. Just because it's more of a happening area. It's just larger. It's a larger city. You have more growth there than Blue Springs. But you can find it. It is a little bit harder. There's not as many of those kind of starter homes, and any of the new builds are just not worth it, you know, to go after. But yeah.
Okay. So you'd have to be patient. It's not something that you can just expect to pick up something in a, it's not like going through a Amazon and just clicking on a rental property and putting it into your portfolio and you know, you're done. So you probably have to do a bit of homework, or it might take you 6 months, but eventually something's going to pop up that's going to be a nice turnkey type of property where there's not a lot of work that you've got to put into it before you can get a renter in there and really get it cash flowing. And so you got to be a little patient, but I think that would be one of the benefits to working with you guys is that you guys are on top of almost every single property that's for sale, whether it's on the MLS or not. So if you've got an investor where you know exactly what they're looking for, if something pops up, even if it's not in the MLS, you can give them a call, show them the pictures and say, hey, are you interested in this? We're going to give you first right of refusal. And so you get some opportunity there to still get that 1% RV ratio.
And along those lines, because, you know, it is such a hot area, there are people, several investors that are looking for stuff. So when something does come up, there is a high demand. So typically there's multiple offers And so, and a lot of times it'll go over asking. So it, yeah, patience is for sure the key all the way.
Yeah. What are there any opportunities for people to go in and get a property that's a little less attractive and fixing it up? And I don't mean by doing what I used to do, where I'd buy them where they're almost unlivable and then kind of force that equity through doing a big remodel, but maybe just something that's dated. It's very livable, but maybe it's dated. It needs a little paint. So you can buy it at a bit of a discount. And it's not like the flippers are into it because there's not enough margin there, but it might be in kind of a sweet spot where the owner occupants don't want to buy it because it's kind of ugly, but the investors don't want to buy it because there's not enough margin. So maybe someone would come in and buy that and just spend a couple grand, two, three grand on paint. And then they don't have the cost basis of buying it a new turnkey property right off the MLS that's getting all these multiple bids. But then, and they still got a little built-in equity there. And now they've got a property that's good to go. Is there any opportunity like that?
Absolutely. I think that's a great strategy because those properties tend to be the ones that sit on the market the longest because the owner occupants, it might be more than what they feel like they can do. Because we're talking about starter homes, people that don't have a lot of money, even something as simple as changing out the countertops and the carpet.
Right.
It could be extremely intimidating for a buyer like that.
And less than $10,000 to do it, it's pretty easy. Takes a week or two to do the work and boom, you're done. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Fantastic. So what are the areas in Blue Springs? Because I think a lot of people, if they see this video and they're not in the area, they're going to go to Google Maps or they're going to go to Zillow and kind of, oh, well, let me look at Blue Springs. Let me look at what Christina was talking about there. So when they're doing that at home after watching this video, if they're looking at Google Maps, what areas can you tell them that you want to avoid and what areas you really want to pay attention to? Understanding the fact that they're looking for these types of properties with this 1% RV ratio, that are in a good school district, that aren't in the ghetto, that are in a very high desirable area that will most likely be desirable for the next 10, 20 years.
The Lee Summit wise, there's really no bad areas, honestly,
yeah.
Lee Summit. So, I mean, that one, it's any of the schools, anywhere you go, there's growth. As you go closer to Overland Park, the prices start going up a little bit more because Lee Summit's right next to Overland Park. But that side's really growing. By downtown Lee Summit, that side's really growing. So that's kind of an area to watch. And then kind of as you get closer to Raymore, which is south of Lee Summit, that's another area to watch where it's been growing. But Lee Summit overall, there's really no ghetto areas. Blue Springs itself, kind of by Kingsridge, right? That's the neighborhood. That Kingsridge.
Yeah, right.
Is the South Outer Road. That can be a little bit iffy. Usually those prices aren't as expensive as the nicer parts of Blue Springs. The older part of Blue Springs, which is right by 740 Highway, and that's kind of by downtown Blue Springs, isn't as desirable because it's a lot of older homes. It's just the older part of Blue Springs where it's just stuff isn't worth as much. And then most of the other cities, I mean, most of the other areas in Blue Springs are good areas. And
So when they're looking at the map, pretty much anywhere Lee Summit, you're good to go. Blue Springs, there's just that downtown area, and that's right off of, what is it, 40 Highway? And I just want to say this so people can get an idea when they're looking at a map, kind of where that is. It's off of which main?
15th Street, in that Street. Area. Yeah. 40 okay. Highway, 15th Street near there.
Right, okay. And then the Kingsridge, was it Kingsridge?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How can they locate that on a map?
Woods Chapel, if you're going off Woods Chapel, right off of I-70.
Okay.
Woods Chapel, if you take Woods Chapel, and you'll see kind of Kingsridge. It's
south of 70.
South of 70.
And then it would be on the east side of Woods Chapel. And it's just before you get to the railroad tracks and Lake Tapawingo, which is up on the right or on the west. Sorry.
Which is a lake there, right, Christina?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's a great community. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very good. And then, what are some of the really primo spots in Blue Springs. I think Keystone Park and just south of Keystone Park, that's kind of a sweet spot for these types of rental properties, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and honestly, one of the hottest areas, because the elementary school, the middle school, like all the top schools for the entire Blue Springs area are in this area. And that would be if you take I-70 to 7 Highway and you go north. There's an area like near Roanoke and 7 Highway. That is everything around there. No, that's a great area.
Yeah. Moreland Ridge Middle School and kind of Franklin Smith, that's another little sweet spot where prices have been booming. I know we sold our house there for $170 mm-hmm. a couple years ago, and then now the ones are worth in the low 200s. A lot of them are popping up. So that area down there is kind of one to watch, that if one does pop up.
And Caleb, how would they find that on the map?
That 40 and 19th Street.
Yeah.
40 and 19th.
And if you take 19th Street, you'll see the elementary school, Franklin Smith, and it's just all around Franklin
That neighborhood
Smith.
Around there.
And then well, that's Keystone Park, right? Just south of Keystone Park?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And on the north end, Palo Park is over there. That's one of the other starter neighborhoods. That's a good neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fantastic. So how would someone go about this if they wanted to, let's say they live in Canada or they live in Oregon or California, and they're like, yeah, this sounds really good. I'd like to get one of these homes that was in really good condition, but just dated, and maybe spend $3,000 or $4,000. So I get it up to the point where it's a turnkey rental, but I can save some money and build a little equity. I mean, mm-hmm. from a logistics standpoint, how would they do that? Let's try to start with how they would get a hold of you guys and what your process would be to actually locate the property. And then assuming they went through the purchase, then how would they get a handyman in there to do that? It seems like it might be a little work. Do we have a solution for that, or what do you guys
Absolutely. Think? So we do this all the time, first of all. I mean, this is right in our wheelhouse. So we're always helping people from all over. So this is not a big deal. Really what we suggest is we really talk price, make sure that their budget is realistic, you know, that for them to get a decent property in the area to do what they want to do, we first of all have that conversation with them and make sure their expectations are realistic. And then we suggest the 3 bedrooms, the 2 bathrooms, and then we set them up on a search and we're sending them things. But Caleb especially, he's really deep in with investors and gets properties that are off market too. So he would be sending those individually. But then anything that comes up that fits what we think would be good criteria, then we take a deeper look and then we really weigh it in. We crunch the numbers. Like I said, I do this for people all the time. So really the best way, let me just kind of backtrack. The best way to get started is to reach out, call, text, email, and just reach out and let us know who you are and that you're interested in investing.
Yeah.
And if we know you're a seasoned investor, or if we know you're a newbie and you've never done this, then we would know how to handle it from there, how much information and guidance you need.
So let's say I call you guys. I'm from Los Angeles. I just sold my place there because I think it's in a bubble. So I've got some cash from that equity. And I say, guys, I've never done this before. I'm super freaked out about property management, about tenants, about getting ripped off, but I've got $150,000 and I'd really like to get a 1% RV ratio. How do you guys respond to that? And what's the next step?
I usually figure out, one, what their motives are. What are you trying to do with the money? Are you trying to build a portfolio? Some people don't want to work, but I always try to figure out what their motive is behind wanting to put the money here, what's their end goal in mind, and then just kind of what kind of property they want. And then
So let me answer that for you. Okay. It would be, I want a passive investment. I don't want to be involved. I don't want to answer the phone when the toilet gets plugged or the roof is leaking or whatever. And I want this to be a store of value. You know, I want it to at least maintain my purchasing power over the next 10, 20 years. I want it to be a hedge against inflation. And mm-hmm. I'd also like to get a really strong revenue stream or cash flow stream from it, which if you're buying cash, and I'm just going to pretend right now that that's the buyer, obviously people could borrow money and leverage a 30-year mortgage fixed rate, which I think would be even better, but we'll pretend we're just paying cash. So I want an 8% return on my money, and I want something that's not going to be a headache. I want something that I don't have to think about. Just every single month I get that check in the mail. In 20 years from now, it's going to be, it's going to have the same purchasing power, if not more, than it has right now.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, then, since usually I'll talk to them about property management, because that's one of the biggest factors as far as having it as passive as possible, because who you choose property management is important, because people will scam you and stuff like that. So I have about two or three that I always refer, and I've had investors work with them and use them, so I know, and currently use them, so I know that they're actually good. Some of them have in-house contractors, so you don't have to worry about contacting a handyman, which I strongly, strongly suggest that. Just because you have it all in-house, and they are cheaper than sending a contractor out there. But having the right property management is important, and I always give them a few recommendations and just say, call them and figure out which one you jive with and which one you think would be a good fit, because obviously everybody has their different, just how they do stuff. So that's the biggest advice as far as that. If you want it passive, you've got to choose a property management company that you trust, that has good reviews, and that you just know is going to be there and just manage it well for you.
Okay, so we have that conversation. You guys know what I'm looking for. You try to line me up with some property managers, but in the interim, we're actually needing to find a property. So that's when it goes over to Christina and Steve, and they set up a search on the MLS, and then they also try to talk to Caleb to see if he's got some off-market listings that might be a good fit for this particular investor. Let's say that you send me 10 properties, Christina, and there's a couple of them that I like. I text you back. I say, Christina, this one looks fantastic. What's the next step?
So we do several things. First of all, make sure it's still available. That's number one. And then the next thing is I'm scrolling through the disclosures, making sure there's nothing scary, sketchy, especially foundations can be a big deal here.
And when you see scary and sketchy, you're talking about from a maintenance or structural standpoint.
Correct.
HVAC, the structural, all that kind of stuff too.
Because I feel like, if that's something that doesn't scare the investor, that's fine. But our job is to give them the numbers and make sure that they're fully aware of the monies they're going to have to put into it. I think that's huge, obviously, to factor everything in. So, we're looking for condition, and I'm passing that information forward. But then, of course, we don't just say, oh, it looks great on paper, you should make an offer. It's a huge deal to us that we actually go drive there, see the area, and lay eyeballs on it. And we
get
like
video
to
too.
Say we like to take video. That way, our investor or our client can see that property at least as well as they can if they're, several hours away. We don't expect a buyer to come and fly in to look at houses every time. That's just not reasonable.
Realistic.
And so the main components that you're looking at is, number one, the foundation. Mm-hmm. Number two is the HVAC. Number three is the roof.
Yes.
Because everything else is just
minor.
Is not that big of a deal.
Basically.
I mean, most for newbies, it might seem overwhelming if there's like a hole in the drywall or something, but we as experienced pros know that that's a 30-minute fix. That's no big deal. As long as your foundation's good, as long as your HVAC is rock solid, and by that I mean your hot water heater, your furnace, and your air conditioner, and as long as your roof is in good shape, then you're not going to have too many surprises that are going to cost you a lot of money, especially when you combine that with a really good inspection. So let's say you guys send, or I send you a property that I like, you guys say, okay, that's rock solid, let's go check it out. Steve goes out there, takes video of everything. He calls the investor, says, hey, I went out and looked at it myself. The foundation looks great. The roof looks great. The HVAC looks great. If you like this property, we might want to go ahead and place an offer on it. Let's say they place an offer, it gets accepted. And then we've got a 10-day grace period there where we can get it inspected. And yeah. So why don't you guys explain that for the newbie?
Sure. Well, first of all, we don't think anybody, not even an investor, should buy a house without an inspection. We are not inspectors. We're laying eyeballs. We know certain things that come up all the time, but we're not climbing in the attic and on the roof. So you for sure want to pay that person to come in and do that, that they're trained to do those things. And they spend a good 3 hours there, and they open every window, every door. They check the electrical panel. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a full-blown inspection. So yeah. Before you move forward to the next step, you're going to have a really good idea of the condition of that
and
property.
A side note on that is sewer lines. You know, I don't know about other cities and states how they do it, but here you have a lot of trees and stuff, and you always do a sewer scope during the inspections because it could be thousands and thousands of dollars if you don't, and that backs up and you have to replace it. So that's just a little tidbit.
And Caleb, when you say trees, for those who aren't familiar with the Midwest, what Caleb is saying there is that they're the roots. So you've got your main line, the plumbing going from the house out to the street. And if you've got a big oak tree in your front yard, those roots could go through and penetrate that main line. And that's generally, what, 5 feet underground? So you can imagine how much it would cost
to do that and
replace it. That is huge money. But during the inspection phase, you can have someone take a camera, for lack of a better term, and they snake it down the whole entire system, and they can see if there's any roots, and if there's no roots, then you're good to go, and you know you don't have anything to worry about. So that's why that's another reason why that inspection is so important. But you guys, not that you do the inspections, but you handle that. You've got several inspectors that you work with. So again, it's not something that an investor would have to actually be there. The inspector goes there, they do whatever they do for 3 hours, and then they send the investor and they send you guys a report that you can then go and call the investor. You guys can have a conversation and say, hey, listen, this looks good. This doesn't look good. I'd be worried about this. I wouldn't be worried about that. And then you could go back to the seller and say, okay, I like the property, but it's going to cost me $500 to fix X, Y, and Z. And then you can actually negotiate that a little bit with the seller. Can you walk me through that?
Yeah, we do that all the time. And usually we tell buyers what you're actually spending out of your pocket for the inspection. Most of the time we can get, you know, through negotiations, pairs for at least that, if not more. So really it comes out in your favor. But anyway, very rarely do they find like hardly anything wrong where you don't really ask for anything. So usually we all expect there to be negotiations after inspections. And keep in mind, we actually write the contract contingent on the findings and coming through agreement after all of that is said and done. So if for some strange reason it does not work out and you back out and do not buy it, you would be due back your earnest money. So you're just out what you've spent on the inspection. But if you think what that saves you for not buying a lemon, if you will, it's, like I said, it's really a no-brainer.
Yeah, and just to tell people how seamless this is and that I practice what I preach, I'm not just telling people to do this. Mm-hmm. Christina, how many properties have I put offers on and have I had you guys inspect with me being in another country or outside of the state?
I don't even know. There have been several. Yeah, I can't guess. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look, but yes, that's correct.
So my point to the viewers is that I have done this exact process with Christina, who knows, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 times.
Right.
So I know that it can be done. And once you go through the process a few times, it's a whole lot less scary than it seems at the beginning, where you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to spend $150,000 on a property that I've never seen. What if it just collapses or something? It's really, that's kind of a irrational fear. And it's not that it's an illegitimate fear. It's just once you go through the process, you realize that it's really not that big of a deal.
I think it all comes down to the team of people that you're working with.
Right, right.
There are in every industry, not just real estate, people that are less than ethical, less than honest, that don't really care about people. And we have not built our business that way. And any person that we work with, that includes inspectors, that includes every single person that we involve in the process that we have control over, they have to meet our standards or we don't work with them. So it all matters who you work with and that you can trust that person.
For sure. And one other thing that I want to point out, I kind of skipped ahead a little bit, but you, Christina, having bought and sold or helped people buy and sell so many properties, obviously, if you're working with an investor that's not in the area, you're going to really be able to add value there in the negotiation process up front before you even get the deal accepted. And if they're asking $150, someone in California might think, oh my gosh, that's an amazing deal, because they're used to seeing $600,000 houses. But you can come in with your experience and say, I don't know, I think we go in at $140 and see where they counter, and let's go back and forth. And I think that you might be able to get this at maybe 145, 147, something like that. So they can really, and I would advise people that if you're going to use Christina, make sure that you're leveraging that, not only her experience, but her skill set in negotiating that deal and getting as low a price up front as you can.
Absolutely. And the opposite is true. If there's 20 offers on the property and they've priced it too low, then I have to be honest and say, you know, this is going to sell for $10,000 more. But I am big on the numbers, and you know that, George, and you know that I love negotiating. That's my favorite part. And so I want our people to get a good deal. And so it's just going to come down, you know, it's a supply and demand thing. So I send my clients the numbers. I actually show them what's sold. I send that information to them because I want them to know that they can trust me. And it's not just me pulling out some number out of the sky. I want them to know that I seriously have done my research and that, you know, numbers don't lie. So
yeah, that's right. And that's, you just got to be a spreadsheet type of person, just to, once you collect all the data, just to get it organized to make a really solid decision. So Caleb, let's go to you. When we get done buying a property, so Christina's negotiated the upfront price, we got a good deal, we went to the inspection, it's a rock solid property, there's nothing wrong with it, it's ready to have a renter go in there, but it needs a little bit of paint, it might need a new countertop, it might need some new tile in the bathroom to give it a little bit of an update. How would that work if I'm in Los Angeles?
So let's say if you use a property manager with an in-house contractor, usually, so I'll give them the keys and they'll have a lockbox set up. And usually like that kind of work, it takes about a week or two. It just kind of depends on how backlogged they are. But I'll usually kind of check in with the property management, see how it's going, and they'll send pics. And then I usually like to make a stop or two out there and just to kind of see how it's progressing. And then I'll usually call my investor and say, hey, you know, I really like what they're doing here. You know, maybe if there's something that I don't like doing, I'll tell them. But I like to go to the property and kind of just check in and see the progress, because, you know, that's something where it kind of helps that investor be more at ease that they're doing it right, especially if, you know, they're maybe picking the wrong finish. But, and then I always try to help my investor kind of speak with the whoever's doing the work about what kind of finishes to do. You know, you probably don't want to go too crazy here. You probably want to do this kind of finish. Maybe you want this kind of flooring. So, you know, try to just coach them on the smart moves to get, especially if you want a higher where it's worth more after you're done with it, if you're going for that kind of thing, if you're cashing out or anything. So, you know, I usually try to coach them. And then when it's ready to get, you know, rented out after they've done everything, it's, you know, property managers, they'll take it over from there, and it's usually pretty smooth. I haven't had any trouble, and it's, again, about choosing the right contractor / property management to kind of handle that, because the investors shouldn't.
So let me step in here and make sure that I'm understanding you correctly. So the investor, if I'm in LA, I'm going to be worried about, man, how on earth do I hire a handyman to do this? I mean, I don't want to fly to Kansas City and put an ad in Craigslist, and then the general contractor is going to rip me off. And But what you're saying is that you can leverage the in-house team that the property management company already has to do those little quick cosmetic fixes that the owner occupants weren't willing to do, which is why you got it at a bit of a discount. And then you, because you're, that's kind of the service that you guys offer, and you guys make the commission, you don't charge anything additional, but it's kind of the whole Brown team package, if you will, that Caleb, you kind of, I don't want to say micromanage, but you're the ears and the eyes of the individual investor that's on top of that in-house team that the property management company has that's doing all of the cosmetic work to make sure that it's not only being done properly, but that the investor isn't spending money where they shouldn't be spending money because they're just not going to get the return.
Exactly. And I'll always do initial. So like it's always a good idea to have the contractor, whoever's going to do the work. I always like to do it during the inspection period. So we could lay kind of what we want to do, point stuff out and walk through it. And then maybe if he has any concerns, you could bring that up when you negotiate after, you know, you do inspections. But I always think it's a good idea to have him come out then, because then you also get the bid and everything in order. So by the time you close, it's, you know, the next day or the next 2 days, you can get him out there quickly. So it streamlines, and I always meet with the contractor during that time and just kind of lay down what I would advise to do. And then usually he'll kind of draw up a bid and he'll send it to me and the investor. And we'll kind of discuss about what he put, you know, maybe if we want to adjust this, you know, why I think this is a good idea, and just kind of coach them along there. So then they feel good about what they're spending on rehab and they have a good idea of what's going to go on. And then, you know, after they close on it, then I'm their eyes and ears, like you said, during that process till it's done.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you help them get a very specific game plan that's going to work for their budget, that's going to give them the property that they want. And then you make sure that the property management team executes on that game plan. And then once that's done, to your point, you can get them in there right away. As soon as the deal closes the very next day, they're in there doing it. Why is that advantageous? Because the faster you can get that thing turned around, the faster you get a renter in there, the faster you're going to start collecting cash flow. And since you're using the property manager's in-house team, you already have them in place. So as soon as that team gets done, in fact, probably even before the team gets done with the remodel, the in-house team, the property management company has already put that out on the market, trying to collect leads for potential renters. So soon as it's done, you've probably got two or three renters already lined up waiting to move in. Is that kind of the way it works?
Rental market is tight around here, just like the housing market. So usually rentals, go in a day or two, just especially the good areas you put where there's not a surplus of rentals, they go quickly, very quickly.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. So guys, if I'm an investor or if I'm someone that's listening to this, how would I get a hold of the Brown team? What's the best way to reach you guys to discuss this further?
Well, our office phone number is 816-463-6806. And then my cell phone number is 816-896-8916. Caleb's, I'll give you his. It's 816-787-7979. All of those, well, I shouldn't say all of them. The first one's an office number. You can't text that one. But you can text my cell phone. You can text him. We'll respond quickly. And then, of course, our email. And our email is thebrownteamwecan@gmail.com.
Okay, very cool, guys. And I'm sure we'll discuss this more in the future.
Yes. I hope so. Yes. Thank you, George.
I'm always happy to talk and discuss. We help a lot of investors, whether it's now or if they're planning to do it next year. So, yeah, but always happy to chat.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.